Hey, I'm not going to wait till the last minute this time to start talking. I'm going to talk right away. How's it going, Mark?
That was like almost like an ambush. I wasn't expecting you to jump in there like that.
I've been planning that all week.
That escalated quickly.
Yes, I've been planning that all week because we always sit there with that little silent, awkward moment. It's like, I'm not doing it this week.
Well, it's not like that one wasn't awkward either.
Stay tuned for next week.
Because we'll go back. Because we'll have even more awkwardness.
Yeah, we'll go back next week into doing a normal.
I'll tell you what, though. Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, episode one was great. And it's gotten, thank you guys and gals, everybody that's downloaded it and listened to it. It's gotten great reviews. It's doing great in the ratings. It's gotten a lot of downloads. Episode one, I could tell that we did reach some people at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to this episode because with all Comic-Cons, and we've talked about this on here before, it seems like towards the end of Comic-Con is when you can really lock in some interviews because everybody's, you know, wrapping up.
Yeah, packing stuff up.
You're catching people as they leave and stuff like that. So, Bill Dundee, a wrestling legend, and it was like WrestleMania day when we talked to him, and this interview you're about to hear with us and Bill Dundee, so he's such a cool, like, down to earth guy, and he's so funny, and he's so, like,
he shoots straight from the hip.
Yeah,
though.
I mean, he doesn't BS, he doesn't beat around the bush. He tells you that he just shoots you straight, and I'm glad, especially I got to talk to him about, like, training.
Yeah.
And working out and exercise.
How old did he say he was?
Well, here's the thing. During this interview, he tells us that he's 73.
That's right.
And I laughed it off because I legitimately thought he was joking. But I went, after we did the interview, I went to his Wikipedia and looked it up. He is really 73 years old.
Holy crap.
He does not look or perform like he's 73.
Dude, he gets around better than you.
I
and
thought
me
maybe
both.
I know. I thought maybe 60-ish, maybe, yeah, maybe even 65, pushing it.
I was thinking 64, 65.
But 73, no way. That's impossible.
That's incredible.
You're not. I mean, if I look that good and perform that well at 73, win.
Yeah. Now his training stuff definitely was some eye-opener stuff about, you know, especially over everything, the do's and don'ts of what to do over 40.
Well, because, I mean, seriously, if you're going to take anybody's word for it, you would definitely want to take his.
Yeah.
Because he's still in great shape, he still looks good, and he's 73. So if anybody's telling you what you need to do, and they look like him and perform like him at his age, you need to listen because he knows what he's talking about.
Dude, I'm not even 40 yet, but this dude probably is drop kicking people still like a champ.
Pile driving dudes.
Yeah,
like
and I, dude, if I drop kick somebody right now, guess what? Hip dislocated or something. I'm just that bad out of shape.
I think I would drop kick myself if I tried to stand up too fast right now.
Probably.
Of course, it is kind of late.
Yeah, we're getting a little late start on this one.
We talked to Matthew Ashley. Am I saying his name right?
Yeah, well, Ashley. I mean, Ashley. It sounds like you're saying Ashley.
Ashley?
Yeah.
Super cool dude, man.
Amazing guy.
I want to tell y'all right now, you need to check out his work, and he's so accessible to his fans. Like, everything we've put on Facebook and every comment, he responds immediately. If you send him a message, he'll respond.
We talk a lot. Me and him talk a whole lot. I'm trying to pull up here real quick.
And while you're pulling it up, like he's so cool and interactive, and he does such great work. I've got his drawing on hanging on the wall right behind us.
Wow, that thing is amazing.
And everybody that's looked at it's like, wow.
And he pencils it. The whole thing is penciled. The art of Matthew Ashley. He's an artist from out of Knoxville, Tennessee. Go check out his Facebook page. It's funny because when I sent him that, he told me to send him a friends request on Facebook so we could keep in touch, you know, because of the podcast stuff. When I sent him the friends request, he accepted it right away, and then he come back over to the table and he's like, man, you just maxed out the friends that I can have. He said, I'm going to have to go through my friends list and delete all the people that don't have, because, you know,
don't delete me, Matt.
People that don't have Facebook,
I'm legit,
anymore,
man.
It actually still keeps their page on your friends list or whatever for some reason.
Yeah.
But he's going to go through and delete all that so he can start getting more friends on there. But he does have a page you can go and like and follow, which I highly recommend it, because this dude is phenomenal at what he does. It's The Art of Matthew Ashley. So check him out.
Definitely. And I haven't told you this yet. You know, the Mike Grill interview was such a big deal for us because we're such big super fans.
Yes.
We're such fans of his work. You know, in this interview where he talked about the vampire comic,
mm-hmm.
I went and bought it. And what's cool is, like, it's an older comic, and it's like one of those, it's like, super expensive, but I'm kind of frugal when it comes to comics. And
yeah.
It had one of those make me an offer things on eBay. Like, they do that now.
And they took it?
Dude, I shot them like this lowball offer just to see, because I figured they'd turn it down because it was in really good shape. And they accepted it. And I was like,
that son of a bitch.
I was like, okay. No
Holy
problem.
Crap. Congratulations on that. I definitely want to read that whenever you get.
Oh, yeah. And it's got the vampire. And he talks about it in this interview. I don't want to spoil it or anything because you guys are going to hear it. But I see what he was talking about when he referenced that.
Yeah.
Even on the cover. And I can't wait to get that in. Another thing I wanted to add, since this is a Comic-Con special, is I finally bit the bullet and just did a sub today. I have a subscription to DC Comics, Batman and Detective Comics.
Yeah, you text me about
because
that.
Because I'm so, like, I finally, like, and I've bitched about this on the show before, the shipping prices on eBay, and I'm not really blaming the sellers. Like, it's shipping is high for them, too, until you get to a certain point, and then you get discounts on shipping because there's so much bulk, I guess.
Right.
But, like, with somebody like DC Comics, they ship out so much stuff that the shipping doesn't cost them anything. And I'm really into the Rebirth stuff, the new stuff that the DC's doing. And I was like, and I've been threatening to do it for a long time. And I was just like, I'm not going to keep buying back issues and paying $5 to $10 shipping per book anymore when I can. I mean, subs aren't that expensive.
Right.
They're really not. You get like 30 to 40% off the cover price of the comic, and you don't pay any shipping. And you get 2 issues per month for each title for 6 months.
So it's actually
it's not a bad deal. It's not like I spent a ton of money doing it.
Right.
And I'm gonna be able to keep up with, you know, the latest titles, which all the stuff they're doing right now in the DC Rebirth is really good,
dude. The comic you got the other day, with the first appearance of Damian Wayne, that comic, the end of it was like a heart sinker for me because it left you with just enough where it's like, no, don't end right here. Don't end right here. Because we were talking about that because I was reading through it real quick and he was like, you didn't just read that comic that fast.
You read
fast.
Comics fast.
Dude,
I've noticed
do.
That about you.
I can read comics
like,
fast.
You'll just be fanning through them. And I'll be like, do you want to take that home and read it? And you'll be like, well, I just read it.
I can read comics fast, but I cannot read books fast. The pictures, the artwork, it captivates me. It keeps me, you know, really, really interested. It's kind of hard to do when you have ADD. But that's why I love comic books the way I do. It's always been that way with me. I've always been able to be intrigued by it. You know, and understand what I'm reading and stuff, and I mean, it's a lot of it's simple to follow.
I didn't want to take too long on this intro because we've got over an hour's worth of interviews and stuff to talk about. A couple of things I did want to plug. We did some SoundCloud stuff, just messing around at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
That's exclusive on our SoundCloud, and I was going to incorporate that into this show, and I was like, well, we've got enough material, so we're just going to leave that on SoundCloud. Just us messing around, a couple of segments, just to, you know, just say hey to everybody.
Right.
I definitely want to plug the Railroad Festival. Thank you guys so much. Like, so many people came out to the Railroad Festival. It was so good.
All day long.
Man, like...
The bands.
All the bands sounded great. We bumped up production this year. Like, the stage was bigger. The sound system was bigger.
The staff was bigger.
I was bigger because I've eaten too many carbohydrates. Everything was bigger.
I want to say a real special thank you to the staff, the stage crew, because I think this year probably was one of the smoothest years yet of getting stuff on and off stage. I mean, it was like that all day long. It was just like clockwork.
Like, I wish I could name everybody individually that helped, and there was people.
It's hard
from...
to keep up because we had a crew.
I mean, there's people from, like, you and Kelly that I just absolutely couldn't do this without. All the Jessa, and I said I wasn't going to name names, but I'm naming the big ones that I literally couldn't do without, all the way to, like, every stagehand, every volunteer. You know who you are.
We love you guys. Thank you.
We love you guys.
Much.
Had another great, successful Rail Festival. We're totally looking forward to next year. And next year is going to be a big year because it's the 10th anniversary of the second stage.
Isn't it the 40th anniversary of the whole Railroad Festival?
And it's the
too.
40th anniversary of the Railroad Festival.
That's crazy.
It's going to be an
incredible. It's hard to believe that this has been going on 10 years because I think there's been like 1 year that I did not play the Railroad Festival on the second stage. But it doesn't seem like it should be 10 years already.
It went by quick, man.
Yeah.
So hey, it wouldn't have lasted 10 years if it wasn't for the support. So thank you to our sponsors, thank you to the fans, thank you to the volunteers, everybody that helped out, the sponsors. I mean, we definitely couldn't do it without the sponsors.
Exactly.
You got to have money to do stuff, and I don't have any, so.
I definitely don't have any.
Thank you to our sponsors for giving me some money so I could do this. Speaking of sponsors, why don't we jump into a commercial and jump into this Comic-Con stuff?
Sounds like a plan to me.
Boom.
Those new band shirts look awesome. Where did you get those done?
At Anarchy Design.
They do screen printing now?
Oh yeah, they do professional custom screen printing at a very competitive rate.
Well, where can I find them?
Look them up on Facebook, facebook.com/anarchydesign69, or email them at anarchydesign69@gmail.com. You can check out some of their work on their Facebook page. When you're ready to order, you can send them your idea, or they can design it for you. It's a one-stop shop for all your screen printing needs. That's anarchydesign69@gmail.com. It's a one-stop shop for all your screen printing needs. That's anarchydesign69@gmail.com.
Are you all from around here?
Yes, sir.
So you know about Memphis wrestling, right?
Oh, yes, sir.
All right.
All right, I'm joined here with the original superstar, Bill Dundee. How you doing, man?
I'm doing real good. How about y'all?
We're great, man. Have you had a good time this weekend?
Yeah. We was here all day yesterday. Then we went over to Oklahoma and we had a wrestling show. So I got home about, I don't know, midnight last night. And here we are. Sunday morning.
Yeah. You do a lot of cons and stuff like this?
Yeah. Stay pretty busy.
Yeah.
I only do them around here. I don't want to go too far away.
Well, I'm going to try not to ask you the cliche questions, but I can't help but, you know, start from the beginning here. You started out wrestling in Australia, right?
Right.
When you came over to America and started wrestling, did you notice any big change in the style or in the rules, or what was the biggest culture shock, I guess, in the wrestling?
No, it was all worldwide on the same type thing.
Uh-huh.
Now Vince McMahon did his thing and WCW did their thing, and it was kind of different. WCW said they were the real wrestling company. Well, still professional wrestling.
Right.
And Vince McMahon didn't mind telling me it was showbiz.
Right.
And Vince is still around and WCW isn't. But that's another story.
Yeah. Well, you brought up WWE and Vince McMahon. Today is WrestleMania. Do you ever keep up with?
No, I wouldn't watch that. Laura has a nightclub down in Memphis on Beale Street, and I'm supposed to go down there today at 6 o'clock. Randy Hales runs it for him, and he's from Jonesboro, and he used to run Power Pro. Whether I go or not, I don't know. I mean, there'll be a lot of WWE wrestling fans there.
Do what?
There'll be a lot of WWE wrestling fans there watching it on the TV.
Probably,
on the,
yeah.
And I just don't know if I could put up with them. No, and I understand it isn't what I did.
Right.
And what's another sad thing, for my case, as far as being in the wrestling, John Wayne couldn't get a job in the movies today. And that's real sad, too, and if he's still living, because John Wayne was the man when I was growing up.
Oh, yeah,
now there's
for sure.
People that you've never heard of, you know what I mean? So, yeah. But I don't go to many movies no more either. So, and wrestling's all different. They make a lot more money than we did, but they run the world. We run 8 states around Memphis.
Yeah, that was the territories.
Right, territory days, and I wish it was still like that, but can't go back.
Are there any of the promotions that you keep up with, like Ring of Honor or anything like that?
No. And here's the other thing with the deal. I mean, I've been around this business since 1962, and you get guys that's been in it for 10 minutes, and they think I'm goofy. But we were selling at Memphis every Monday night, and Louisville every Tuesday, and Evansville, Indiana every Wednesday, and Lexington, Kentucky on a Thursday. Then we came back to Tupelo on a Friday, Memphis TV on a Saturday, Jonesboro, Arkansas on a Saturday. And you were off Sunday sometimes. Sometimes we did Jackson, Tennessee. So we were on the road 7 days a week. And, you know, for the time we was doing it, you was making good money. But today all the young kids think they've reinvented the wheel. And half of them shouldn't be in this business. They should be buying tickets and charging them double, too. So that's and they don't like me telling them that, but it's true.
Yeah.
They don't know a wrist lock from a wrist lock. See, I started off on judo, so I mean... And my uncle had a judo school, and I did that for about 6 or 7 years. Then there was no money in judo, so I saw a poster on the wall, and it said professional wrestling. I said, hell, I can do that. So the guy said, no, you're too little. I said, well, David whooped Goliath, so how little or big do you have to be? Yeah. So that's kind of how I got into the sport. Then Jim Barnett had Georgia Championship Wrestling. About 1964, he came to Australia, and for the next 20 years... they had a wrestling in Australia, and George Barnes and I got hooked up for him, and then Bobby Shane, he got killed in that plane wreck in Florida about 20 years ago. He liked this, and he got us booked here for Jerry Jarrett, so here we are. Came here in 1975.
Well, almost any wrestling fan, especially around here, if you ask them, what are the greatest feuds in wrestling history? And you already know what I'm going to say.
Yes, I
people
do.
People are going to say Lawler and Dundee. Some people are going to, you know, bring up Steamboat, Flair. And
Steamboat Flair, they were a flash in the pan. They didn't do what me and Lawler did. And they were very good at what they did.
Yeah,
absolutely. But it wasn't me and Lawler. They didn't do the long 30-year run. And the other thing was, I think Steamboat and Flair liked one another. Me and Lawler, we tolerated one another, but that's why it was so good in the ring.
Yeah, absolutely. Was there any point, I know, like, speaking of Steamboat and Flair, that long feud kind of came to a culmination at a particular pay-per-view. I don't even remember the name of the pay-per-view, but it was a three falls match. But anyway, with your feud with Lawler, was there a moment like that where it kind of came to a head and culminated in one
no,
big
not
event?
Really, because it's still going.
It's still going today.
We still go to the local show and it would be the thing. But so, no, it's still running as far as, like I said, we're not best friends. We don't break bread every day. I mean, he don't come to my house and I don't go to his. But we have a lot of respect for one another for what we did.
Absolutely.
And it worked. And Jerry Jarrett knew it worked, so... here we are, 40 years later.
I saw your car out front. What was the title that's on your shoulder on that picture?
The AWA Tag Team Champions. Yeah, that was me and Lawler was the AWA Tag Team Champions for Gagne.
Gotcha. How many title reigns have...
No idea.
You have no idea?
No idea.
Do you have a particular favorite title reign?
No, I never liked being the champion because you got to cart the belt around. That was just a pain in the ass. You had to put it in your bag and take it to the town. And I'm saying that in jest, but it's really true.
Yeah.
I cart that damn belt around. So it didn't mean nothing. As far as I say, it didn't mean nothing. You was the champion, but what was you the champion of? Ric Flair said, I'm 17 times world champion. Well, bless your heart. Of what?
Didn't the champions get paid more back then, though? Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, you got paid more. Yeah, if you had a belt and all that, you'd get paid more. But that part never bothered me either. So, yeah, you had to pay Ric Flair when he came in to wrestle Lawler or whatever. You had to pay him a percentage of the gate, and I understand that part. So to have that belt for that would be good, but it's still professional wrestling.
Right.
Always a champion to me, too.
Always a champion.
But I thank y'all for that, but I mean...
What do you remember, like particularly like a longest title run that you ever had? I know back in those days, some people would. Nowadays, you carry the title for a week, because everything moves so fast. But back then,
you didn't draw money with it, you didn't get it.
Right.
So don't let anybody kid you that this was this and this was that, because they liked this. I mean, Lawler drew when he was the Southern champion. You could bring Ric Flair into wrestling because he was the Southern champion, and that would draw. It was all about money.
Right.
And Lawler owned part of the promotion. Him and Jerry Jarrett, you know, owned the company. So he was the champion. But, no, I like tag team wrestling best. So, I mean, if I could have been the tag team champion forever with somebody, I'd have liked that. Single wrestling's all right, but it's a lot harder because you're just in there by your lonesome.
Yeah. I saw you wrestle, I think, about a year ago in Nettleton for OWO. And
yeah.
The first thing I said, no joke, I was like, man, he's still in really good shape. Are you still training? Or are you just one of the lucky ones?
Still work at. No, and I never did. No, that's not true. I did a lot of silly things when I was younger, but you have to quit when you get to about 40. You can't keep doing wild women and cocaine and drinking whiskey and doing all the things that you did when you was a kid.
Absolutely.
Body wears out. So, I mean, I quit way back when. So I haven't done really nothing goofy in 30 years except go to the gym and train, but. Yeah, and we did a lot of silly things, like everybody else.
What kind of training are you doing today? You still just
weightlifting, and I ride my bike. I have a mountain bike. I like to ride, so mainly weights and riding my mountain bike. Hate running because it's hard on your knees.
Yeah. Speaking of the joints and everything,
the other thing is diet. You have to eat right.
Right. Yeah. That's what I need to do. Eat right.
Right. If you have a race car, you can't run it on kerosene.
Right.
So and it's the same thing with your body. The fuel you put in your body.
I bet when y'all were on the road a lot, I bet that was hard to do because you don't have a lot of good choices to make when
especially
gas station
back then it was, hamburger joint and all that thing. But you don't have to eat the bread. There's all kinds of things you can do. It's the bread, it's the bad thing on the hamburger.
Right.
Because they'll put pickles on it and tomatoes. That's pretty good for you, and then you eat the meat. So throw the bread away. And I don't do sugar, and I don't do salt. So all the things that... And it's worked for me. I've been 210 pounds for the last 40 years and still am today. So,
awesome. So you usually try to like cut carbs a little bit?
Yeah. No, I like to drink beer just like everybody else. But instead of drinking the 12-pack, drink two or three beers. It's, you know.
Yeah.
Was it put 12-pack back in the good old days.
Yeah, I may have had two or three too many last night myself.
Yeah,
I was a little slow
you.
This morning.
Yeah. And then another drink I like was whiskey and water. So quit all that. So like I said, you as you get older, your body don't recoup like it used to.
Oh, I know. I'm 40, so I, yeah. And the
you're
whiskey 40? Really does slow
Ooh,
you down.
Mercy, yeah. I was 40 once. Now I'm 73, right? Yeah, that's what I am, 73. Oh, if I'd known I was going to live this long, would have took better care of myself.
Took better care of yourself. Well, you were talking about like getting around in some of your joints and stuff. Let's talk injuries. You had a lot of, have you been
none.
Lucky? You've
very
had
lucky. No, I could do this. and it's true. I mean, I
sometimes other people hurt you though accidentally.
Them idiots that run over and jump over the top rope and land on the floor, that's not going to last long.
Yeah.
The name of the game is wrestling. It says it on the marquee, and the guy, what do you do? I'm a professional wrestler.
Right.
Well, and I worked on the circus too, so I mean, I could do all them acrobats and things that you did, but an acrobat in the circus is different from an idiot jumping over the top rope and landing on the concrete or doing whatever, and they think that's wrestling.
Yeah.
And if you tell it to them, they look at you like you're nuts. You won't be around when you're 50, never mind 70. So I started back in 1962, and I'm still going now. And here we are, and so far, touch wood, everything's been good. I had one knee replaced, but I hurt that 40 years ago, and I just got it done about 4 years ago. So that was the best thing I ever did, but that's really the only thing I've ever had to do, just wore one knee out. Well, I guess that's not bad in 60 years, huh?
That's not bad at all. A lot of the guys actually have almost as many injuries in the weight room as far as rotator cuff, knees, and stuff like that as they do in the ring.
Well, I don't know. I went to the gym every day since 1962. And
still good to go.
And back in the day when Rutledge Johnson, we used to work at. See, here's the thing today, going to the gym and being back there. When you walk to the gym 30 years ago. How much can you bench press? How much can you squat? How much can you deadlift? It was all how much weight can you put on the bar. Well, we all went through that, and that does hurt you a little bit as far as rotator cuffs and things like that. So do the exercise with the weights. You're going to the gym today, there's all kinds of machines. You don't have to lift them heavy weights.
Right.
But the man's ego, that's what we did. But you don't have near as many guys doing that today in the gym as they did when I did it and when I started. Because Arnold Schwarzenegger was like the poster child for bodybuilding. Arnold was into heavy weights. So we all thought that's what you had to do. Now we learned it's a science.
Absolutely, yeah. And like you said, with the diet and the
diet is, and then there's a thing called testosterone that some of them would do back in the good old days. So I just don't know. But and if I'd been 6'2" instead of 5'7", I may have done it too. But I never thought I was tall enough to do, and it never made you grow no taller. So not interested.
Gotcha. Tell us a little bit about your book. It came out in 2011.
Yeah.
It's called...
If you don't want the answer, don't ask the question.
That's a good title. Tell us a little
and,
about
and
that.
And it's a true story, and that's a kind of like I live my life. Some kid will say to me, did you watch my match? Yeah. How was it? I say, you don't really want me to answer that. And that's a kind of how the book came out on that. And it's true. People will ask you the question, but they don't really want your real answer. They want the answer that they're thinking.
They want the entertaining answer.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. Yeah. Okay. So... That's how that book title came up, and if you've read it or read some of it, it's a kind of wrote that way. I mean, so that's why it's only not as thick as some of them.
Yeah.
So I read Lawler's first one. It was more of a love story that was kind of about wrestling.
Gotcha. And is that available on Amazon? Where can people pick that up? Do you have it at your table?
Yeah, I have it at my table right here. That's the thing. And Mrs. Dundee looks after all that, so I really couldn't tell you if I would sell it. But we do all right with it.
Good deal. Have you thought about doing a follow-up? Maybe?
Yeah, I've thought about doing a follow-up.
Kill Pop Culture exclusive information here.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. When I wrote that one, it's pretty well not too bad. But you can't just hammer the truth because some people are still married to the same woman they were 100 right. years ago, and they did this, that, then, and they don't do it now. So to tell the real absolute truth would hurt people. Yeah. You know, as far as thinking, I was no angel either, so it's just like, and I've been married 3 times and all them other things, and it was stupidity that got me in the other two, because, you know, the mother of your babies is really the one that you're married, you know, that's how you look at it.
Yeah.
Or how I looked at it anyway. Well, them other two were fun, but no kids, no none of that, you know.
Right.
So, this business has been very good to me, and the people say, well, you're not, you know, no, well, you didn't, when I started, you said, well, you're not very big. I said, well, David wasn't very big either, but he whooped Goliath's backside, so you tell me. And like I told you, I did judo, and I allowed him to do this, so they would get into a shock sometimes when they figured that little fella. Now, guys like Billy Robinson and Tony Charles and that type English wrestler, you could have a stick in each hand and you still wouldn't beat them.
Still couldn't beat them.
No, baseball bat in each hand, you wouldn't whoop them. I mean, that's just how bad they were. So, and Billy Robinson was, whoo, mercy. He should have been the world's champion and he would have hung on to the belt forever.
Yeah. When's the last time you talked to Jim Cornette?
Oh, I try not to talk to Jim Cornette. Yeah. No, that's not true, but have you ever talked to him?
No, I haven't. I haven't met him.
Oh, you're in for a treat.
I've seen some YouTube videos, some pretty crazy
he's obnoxious.
Behind the scenes.
And
you got a good story that's tellable on the air, a Jim Cornette story? Blowing up on some people in drive-thru or
well,
throwing his food at people?
Oh, well, how we got into the business is a funny story.
Yeah.
His mother and Jerry Jarrett's mother were big friends in Louisville, Kentucky, and we run every Tuesday night. Cornette used to come and take pictures. Irritating son of a gun. He was 16 or 18, whatever he was back then. He was very irritating, knew everything.
Yeah.
And he's still that way today. So Jerry Jarrett comes to me one day and he says, that Jimmy Cornette just bugs me to hell. He said, do you think if we got him in the wrestling business and he would be a manager, the fans may kill him? And he said it like in jest, but he really kind of meant it. So he said, we need to go talk to his mother, and my mother will talk to her, and we'll see if we could get him in the business. And that's how he got in the business. He took pictures in Louisville, Kentucky, And Jerry Jarrett thought we'd get him in the pit, the fans will kill him. So, but they didn't, and Jimmy's been around, and I took him to Louisiana when I was the booker there for Bill Watts for 2 years. Drew a lot of money with him in the Midnight Express against Ricky and Robert, the Rock and Roll Express. And Cornette's very good at what he does.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, if he's thinking it, he will say it, which there's nothing wrong with that. I'm kind of the same way as that, too. And he's very opinionated, and that's all right, too. So am I. But he's, you know, I don't know, office-wise, I mean, where he worked. I think he's worked in Booker somewhere and done things, so I don't know. I never worked on him on that. He was always worked for me when we was the other way. But Cornette is very good at what Cornette does, and he's a very good talker, and he's intelligent and smart. So,
right on. The American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream.
Oh, where, I like
what promotion did you work with him at?
WCW. And then I met him in Australia in about 1968 or 9. Jim Barnett brought him and Dick Murdoch to Australia as the Texas Outlaws. I was just a kid trying to get going then, and Dusty was, him and Dick were the tag team, and they were over Lake Rover, and they were very good. And I've always liked Dusty.
Right.
And so has Dusty. He's always liked Dusty. I mean, you have to know that with him. I mean,
right.
He ain't going to... He'll give you a few accolades, but he will tell you the American Dream is what it's all about. And that's all right, too. We're all like that.
Right.
And I think we have that kind of personality and that egotism for that to work.
Right on.
Because if you don't think you're great, and you have to prove it to somebody else.
Right.
Right.
Did you and him ever tag together? Did y'all work any matches?
Big Dust?
Yeah.
No, I did jobs for him in Australia when we come over there. But I never...
Y'all never tag team together?
Never did that. None of them... And he was a kind of, by the time we all got to WCW, he was running it. He was in the office, so he wasn't wrestling like he did. And so as far as actually working, Dusty in the ring, a couple of times in Australia, but the match went 2 seconds, so it was one of them deals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, before you go, is there anything you want to plug, any upcoming events that we need to know about that you're going to be at?
No, Miss Dundee does all that. Like she just says, Bill, we have to be here and we're there.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know.
Look for the car. Look for the car out front. You can't miss it.
There you go, the car. And I did that for a rib type thing. And it has turned out to be, I mean, and when I did it, I didn't really. Because when you've been off TV for 40 years or 20 years, whatever it is, and you go somewhere, people look at you and say, is that Bill Dundee? But when you pull up in your car and you got your picture and your name all over it, hey, that's Dundee. So they'll come up and talk to you. So it's good for that part as far as the promotion part.
For sure.
So, and you know, and I guess my wife says, you got a little senile and you got to put your picture on your car so you can find it when you park it.
Right.
No, that's it. But it works business-wise. I've enjoyed having it on there.
That's good. We're going to post for a picture.
I think we're getting a picture made. Hi, Mom.
All right. Well, we'll look up your website information, stuff like that, and we'll plug it. I should appreciate you coming by and talking to us for a minute.
I've enjoyed it. Yeah. So maybe we'll do it again sometime.
Sir.
Thank you.
It was an honor. Pleasure
Thank
to
you,
meet
sir.
You.
All
have
right.
Good afternoon.
Well, we're going to go home. I got a show tonight. I got to go to Lawless Bar, for God's sakes. We got that WrestleMania on there, down there at his nightclub down there on Beale Street. Randy Hales runs it, and he used to do Power Pro Wrestling. So when I leave here, I'm going down to Beale Street.
Well, don't drink too many of them bourbons now.
No, I won't be doing that now. I don't think the king will be there. I think he's out of town. That's why they want my silly, sorry backside, because we'll be at least somebody from Memphis there.
Absolutely.
And Randy Hale. So, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thanks.
All right,
thanks
guys.
Again.
Thank you.
You have a good day. Hey, man, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you all?
Good, good. Tell us your name.
Matthew Ashley. I'm celebrity character artist.
Awesome. Looks like you've had a pretty good turnout today. You've had
pretty much a standing line since I've been here yesterday, man. The crowd has been absolutely incredible here in Tupelo. Loving it.
Yeah, I thought yesterday, which it was the big day, but there were so many people here yesterday that I thought today would be kind of dead, but there's still people up there buying tickets.
Absolutely,
now.
Man. It's been a really great turnout, man.
Really, really cool.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about obviously, you draw pictures.
I do.
Kellogg bought me one of our guys that on our staff. He bought me the Death in the Family.
Yeah,
for
the
my
Batman
birthday.
Piece. Yep. Yeah, that one's titled Live and Let Die. And I do a lot of celebrity work. I got started by the Walking Dead cast. I did a piece of fan art for T-Dog years ago. And since I've done that, things have just kind of snowballed. And I've done work for just about every TV show and actor you can imagine.
That's so awesome, man. What's
really
some
lucky
of your
fortunate?
What's some of your favorite pieces that you've done?
My favorite that I've done so far is my Star Wars piece. It's a BB-8 and Rey. It's got a huge, bright sun, shiny sunset in the background with TIE fighters in the sky and everything. And that one's titled House of the Rising Sun.
Okay. One thing I really liked about the piece that he got for me, I would pull it out. It's over there in the box. But it was kind of like a modern take on
right.
Because I love the Death and the Family story. I just went back and read it. I own the whole four part thing. And it was cool because their costumes are sort of like the modern.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The cool thing about that is actually a father and son cosplay team that go and do a charity events across the state of Tennessee. And I was hired to do that for the dad that, Batman right now in the picture. I was doing that for his birthday for a surprise.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, that one took about 10 weeks to do. Lots of detail, but I love that one. That's one of my absolute favorites that I've done so far.
So what is this? Is this pencil? Is this
pencil? And it sure is.
Is that kind of like your favorite thing to use?
Yeah, it's always pencil, and then I always do a watercolor version after I do the pencil version.
So all your stuff, you start with the pencil, then you color it with
watercolor markers, paint. Okay. You know, anything I can get my hands on.
Yeah, that's really cool. And
thank you.
This is the name of your company here?
That's my last name, Ashley.
Ashley?
Uh-huh.
And that's how you advertise to...
Right,
okay.
Yeah.
So that's like the name of your brand.
Right, exactly.
What about social media and stuff like that, if people want to go look at some of your
stuff? I am everywhere. I am on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I have a website, which is www.artofmatthewatchley.com. And I'm also on Facebook. It's The Art of Matthew Ashley. So please like my page, guys. Come see out
is there
all
a
my
lot
work.
Of, is there a lot of pictures of your work on the Instagram?
Absolutely. They're all on there.
Yeah, we're definitely going to add you. He does our Instagram, and I think that's really cool.
How
does that work? I mean, when you do a piece and you do the original, how do you, like, get it duplicated or whatever?
I go and get it professionally scanned by someone that's got a degree in graphic design so that they can match it up exactly like the artwork actually looks in real life. Mm-hmm. And from there, I just make copies like at Office Depot, Office Max, but they're really fine, good quality, heavy cardstock paper prints.
But. Are there some you have where you have like a numbered, like a
actually the Batman is about the only one I have done a limited version of those. I did 50.
Oh, I didn't know this was a limited. What number is this?
That one, I believe it's 45, somewhere around there.
Oh, okay. Is it like wrote on the back or somewhere? Like what number?
Yeah.
Okay. Right on. Yeah, I didn't know that was numbered. I'm gonna have to, like, in my man cave I have a lot of Batman stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to do me like a little shrine in the corner.
My whole bathroom is Batman themed, man.
Yeah, the Batman, the bat room.
Purple walls, yellow, the whole nine, man.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I bet you do have a lot of like really cool art around your house.
Man, it's pretty cool. People say it's almost like a museum with all the autographs and pictures, posters, all that stuff. I've been really lucky over the past 6-7 years, man. I've got to meet a lot of really cool people.
What do you do with the originals?
I've got them all right now. I'm planning on doing a big auction in the future. I'm also starting a gallery in Newport, Tennessee, and an art school in mid-June in Newport, Tennessee as well. And all that's going to be tied together. So I'm going to probably end up doing some selling of the originals in a few months.
That's really cool. We need to keep an eye on that. Well,
absolutely.
Thanks for talking to us for a minute. It looks like
My
you may
pleasure.
Have some customers over there. I don't want to keep you away too long. But
well,
I
thank you so much. It was a pleasure getting to sit next to you guys and get to know you guys over the past couple of days, man.
Awesome.
And good luck with your all show and everything.
Thank you.
Man.
Nice
you
to
guys
meet you.
Are great.
Thank you. You have a good one.
You too.
Are you looking to reach a wider audience? Are you looking to get your name out there? Are you looking to go to the next level with advertisement? Well, think no more. Advertise with us at Kill Pump Culture.
Just tell us a little bit about your business and leave the rest to us. We'll build you a state-of-the-art commercial to be played every episode.
We're only going to take on about one or two more sponsors, so be sure to grab these slots up before they're gone.
We have plans to fit any budget, and we can build a commercial for any type of business.
Email killpopculture69@gmail.com today.
All right, man. This is it's winding up towards the end of the day today, and I'm glad I caught you before we got out, because I talked to you briefly yesterday, and I want you to introduce yourself to everybody, tell everybody who you are and what you do, but One thing that, and if I think I heard you right, don't you not only write your own comic, but you do the artwork, the writing, and everything?
Well, I actually don't do the illustration. I wish I could draw, though, you know.
Okay.
No, I can't take that credit. I employ professional artists. These guys have done some work with DC and Marvel Comics. There's a list of guys. I really can't name all of them, but they're incredible. But I am the writer and creator of it. It is my baby, and the publisher. And the name of my company is Red Crow Comics.
Okay.
So it's a limited liability company, and it's been formed about 2.5 years ago. We got a couple of titles out right now on Bermuda City and Salta, and we're proud of them. Pretty good. Going awesome.
Yeah, that's.
And my name is Julian J. Burton, by the way.
Right on. You had a lot of, looked like you had a lot of interest today. You had a lot of customers come by.
Yeah.
And yesterday.
Yeah, man, it's went pretty well, man. I'm definitely excited about it. People are gravitating to the pitch, and I love the, you know, get a lowdown to the fans and people who are interested in the comics, rather just, you know, here's a comic. You know, I want to give you the synopsis, and I think people will gravitate to the storyline and the originality of it. And it's fresh on the comic market, so people have been digging it. So we're proud of it.
Cool. You said it's fresh on the scene. Have you been going to a lot of cons here recently to push it, or are you just getting started?
Oh, hell yeah. We've been doing comic tours for the past 2.5 years now.
Oh, wow.
Salta was my first release, my first title, back in the summer of 2014. And since then, it's been Murder, She Wrote. Our first Comic-Con was in the Boston Comic-Con. And after that, you know, we went more on a southern tour. I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. Mm-hmm. We stand in the northern region of Alabama right now, like in the Huntsville area. But it's been mostly stuff, you know, here in Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, all that good stuff.
Right on. Well, in your earlier titles, were you ever with a company, or was the idea from the get-go to just do your own thing?
Nah, it was my idea. You know what? You know, actually, she left you in a little story. About 7 years ago, I wrote some spec scripts to DC and Marvel. I knew it was a long shot, so I didn't hear back from them. And then one day I just woke up and said, you know what? I'm an independent filmmaker. That's what I do by trade. And I was like, you know, we got a few shorts out. You know, people like the characters. Let me go ahead and transition those to the comic world. And so that's pretty much it. We kind of married the two.
That is really awesome, man. I really respect the independent guy that just says, hey, I'm going to do this myself.
Yeah,
I'm going to be my own boss.
Hey, it's a revolution, man. You got a lot of that going on nowadays, and I love it. I love the network with people like you guys and other independent artists and the comic creators. It's a growing base, and I'm digging it. I'm glad to be a part of it around this time.
All right, so list out the titles you've got so far.
Right now I have Salta and Bermuda City. Those are my two titles. Salta is a 4-limited issue series, and Bermuda City is a 6-limited issue series. And currently we're working on the second issue of Salta. And we have a mini series called Crunch that's going to be making its debut in the second issue of Salta. Hopefully it'll be released this summer.
Right on. So were you always a huge fan of comics, like when you were a kid and stuff, and then you decided to be a part of it?
Yeah, man. What kind of question is that, man? You know what I'm saying? Yeah,
I like asking dumb questions.
Nah, it's all good, man. I've been a comic head since I can remember, man. I got away from it. I started playing ball, you know, in school, and kind of got away from it, and chasing the girls and all that, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, got back around to it, you know, when I started doing film about 10 years ago, and I developed a stronger love for it ever since, because I understand story now on a different categories from reality and characterization. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So it's bringing that mature mentality, but with that child heart. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
I get it.
Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of it.
So was there a time period where you were interested in being a writer, and you were trying to figure out like how to get into it? Like how was that process like when you just go, hey, I think I'm going to write comic books. I mean, is that a tough place to start?
Not really, man.
Or did you have an advantage because of the film thing?
I would say, I will be lying if I say I didn't have an advantage, just because a comic script is very similar to a screenplay.
Okay.
They're very identical. You know, if you can write a screenplay, you can write a comic, vice versa. So the structure is very similar. And so that you know, helps a lot of time, you know what I'm saying? Because you got to have a story first, a script first.
That's cool.
And so bringing that experience into that helps out a whole lot. But honestly, man, personally, that's something I just wanted to do. And I just tried it and learned it. I wasn't an expert in it, but throughout the years, I got that experience and I got that assistance and guidance, and I've been doing it ever since.
Right on, man. Well, I appreciate you stopping by. Before you go, let's definitely plug all your social media and all the places where people can go look, check out your comic and buy it.
Yeah, man, you can check out the comic. Go to our official website, RareCrowComics.com, and we're on social media, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, at Rare Crow Comics. Also, I want to mention, too, that Bermuda City is based on a live-action web series that's currently on YouTube that you can find on our website. It's a free watch. It's currently a five-part web series.
Right on, man. Well, I don't want to keep you long. I know you got to get out of here. You probably got some traveling to do, and I just want to catch you before you left. I should appreciate your time.
No doubt. I appreciate you, man.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man.
Right on, bro. When is the next for both of them coming out?
Well, not yet. Salted, the second issue of that is currently in process, and hopefully sometime this summer. I can't really tell you. It's a budget, you know what I'm saying? Like $5,000 per issue, you know?
Do you have any business cards or anything like
yeah,
that?
Man.
Yeah, I got a couple of these cards.
I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our good friends and sponsors of this show, Shadow Stalkers Paranormal, from Amory, Mississippi.
This isn't your average paranormal thing.
Shadow Stalkers is a nonprofit group that hosts fundraisers for families in need, and they also host fundraisers for historical sites.
Their fundraisers and paranormal investigations are open to the public, and they encourage everyone not to just watch, but to join in.
Look them up on Facebook and feel free to shoot them a message if you have any questions.
They are here to assist you with any paranormal needs you may have.
That's Shadow Stalkers Paranormal. Go search for them on Facebook and check them out. That's Shadow Stalkers Paranormal. Go search for them on Facebook and check them out.
All right, talking about a grand finale. I got Mike Grill here in the flesh.
Don't shoot. I swear I didn't do it.
You didn't do it. You're innocent, huh?
Not exactly innocent.
You had a good time this weekend?
It was great. Yeah, they're really coming together with this show. I think for a second-year show, they've done really remarkably well.
Yeah.
Get their organization together. Best of all, they have plenty of room to expand. And from here on, you know, expect 5 years from now, we'll be in 3 or 4 different buildings.
Yeah, I agree. I talked to Jamie, the president of the Comic-Con, he said that last year they planned for having 400 and they had 2,200. And this year, I don't know how many they planned for, but they had a lot. I haven't talked numbers with him yet, but it was very successful. And a word must have got out that you were here because it looked like you had like steady business both days, but especially today, right?
It was busier today, which is good. I think a lot of times first day of the show, folks are just watching their budget and
scoping it out
and going, okay, if I have any money left, I'll come back. And there were a bunch that waited till the last moment. But
it's funny you say that because I brought that was it Batman 289 I brought with me for you to sign.
Yeah,
and I brought that one with me, and I got you to sign it Saturday. And then today I was over at this table looking at their comics, and they had like 288 or something like that. It was one of yours also.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm going to buy this and get him to sign it too. So yeah, that's really cool, man. I'm sure you do a lot of these all over.
Yeah, I've been everywhere just this month.
This month?
I've been to every state in the union at least once. The only ones that I've been to only one time, I think, are Alaska and Hawaii.
Oh, wow. Who are you currently writing for?
Actually, I don't have a writing gig at the moment, but I'm finishing up a Sable novel. We're going to be releasing the first novel, as an e-book, and then print on demand. And then following that up with the next Sable novel, which is called Freelance. I've been chasing the Hollywood rabbit, like a lot of us are these days. Mm-hmm. But that damn bunny just keeps running faster
and
faster.
It's a hard bunny to catch.
I've had a screenplay. I've written a screenplay that's getting some good play right at the moment. And unfortunately, Hollywood is the land of dreams, but it's also the land of BS.
Yeah, I can imagine.
There's a lot more BS artists than there is folks who can make something happen. And we've been close several times, and something happened at the last moment. It just fell apart. But
I got you.
If the world turns right and we get another shot at a movie, I think we can make this one happen finally. And then we'll be releasing a bunch of new stuff. I have a graphic novel called Rules of the Hunt that I'll be bringing out to coincide with that. And then I'm two chapters away from finishing another novel called Earthbound, which is about the firstborn child of the new millennium who's about to turn 21 years old, and something is after her and has been after her, following her around pretty much all of her life. New York City cops are looking for a serial killer that has struck 7 times on 7 nights from Christmas to New Year's Eve, killing 7 girls, and before disappearing for another 7 years. And all the girls are killed on their birthday, and it's coming up to Molly's birthday on New Year's Eve. So, yeah.
I'm sensing something's going on with the number 7 here.
Something's going on.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff going on.
What was the first novel you mentioned?
It's called Sable. It's based on the John Sable freelance comic book that I did. The one that was turned into the TV series by ABC.
The reason I asked who you're working with now is because I've always wondered, people in your position, how you work that in with doing all these appearances and doing all these cons and doing all the panels and all this stuff. And you also have to do your other job, which is you know, doing your work for commissions. I mean, there's so much.
Probably a reason why it's several years in between novels for me.
Yeah.
I don't do it primarily as a living. It's a sideline, you know. It's something that I have a passion for, but it's got to find its way through the time.
Yeah.
You know, make time for everything as you go.
I was browsing through your Wikipedia page, and if what I read was correct, I thought it was an interesting story about how you got in with DC. Can you tell us about that, about when you first got...
Sure, but I have to warn you that Wikipedia was mostly written by one guy.
Okay.
Who's really happy because he can claim credit for it, but he got a bunch of stuff wrong.
Okay.
How I got in with DC Comics was trying to break in as a comic strip artist. But when I got out to New York in 73 for the comic convention, nobody was buying action adventure strips at all. They just weren't interested. They were looking for the next Peanuts. And while I was at New York Comic Con, I was showing my portfolio around, and I met Irv Novik, who was the Batman artist at the time.
Okay.
And showed him my stuff, and he told me in no uncertain terms to get my carcass up to Julie Schwartz's office and show him what I had. And I walked into Julie's office with the average encyclopedia salesman speech, you know. Good afternoon, Mr. Schwartz. Could I interest you in this deluxe 37-volume set of Encyclopedia Britannica, complete with annual yearbook and calendar? If you get interrupted anywhere along the line, you got to go all the way back to good afternoon, Mr. Schwartz. And that's how far I got. Good afternoon, Mr. Schwartz. He said, what the hell makes you think you can draw comics? I put my portfolio on his desk and said, take a look and you tell me. And I walked out a half an hour later with a script.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. The rest is history, right?
Pretty much.
Well, let me ask you this. When a fan brings you a comic to sign, is there one comic or one character in particular that you see the most of people bringing to you to sign? I would assume maybe it's probably something Green Arrow, right? Because you did a lot
of
work.
Yes, but close behind Green Arrow is Power Girl.
Really?
Oh yeah, All Star Squadron, the first issue, first appearance of Power Girl.
Yeah.
It has to do a lot to do with the boob window.
Yeah.
You know that circular cutout in the front of her costume?
Yeah.
Yeah. Has almost everything to do with that.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, hey, if it works, it works.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. And tell me about the Batman thing. I got to ask about that because I'm a huge Batman fan. How many titles did you work with on that?
I only did a few issues on Batman. I did 4 back in the 70s. Plus one issue of Detective Comics.
Do you remember which Detective Comics that is?
No, but I can don't just remember
look up
the number,
Detective Comics, but the, I'm sure
but
we
the, but the story has to do with a vampire, and the interesting thing about that is that the story was plotted and actually laid out in thumbnail size by Bernie Wrightson. God rest his soul. We just lost Bernie 2 weeks ago. The drawings that he did for each page were literally 3 inches high by 2 inches wide. And everything was there. The figures were there in position and everything else to tell the story, but it wasn't finished pencils. It wasn't finished drawing, anything that they could publish from. You couldn't ink from it. You couldn't. There was not enough there, not enough information. So Bernie had gone on to do something else, and Julie Schwartz called me in and asked me if I would take those thumbnails and then finish pencil and ink, and I did. Bernie gets all the credit for that. In doing the vampire, I wanted to make this vampire scary, and to me the scariest vampire ever was Christopher Lee. Right, I couldn't get scared. Even as a little kid, I wasn't scared of Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
But Christopher Lee had that feeling of danger about him, and you know that feral savageness. And so, I did research, which was difficult back in the days before Google. When you needed a photo reference, you actually had to go to a library or to a used bookstore, someplace
right.
like that,
you
and dig
just,
up all
you
the old
get on Google.
Right,
yeah.
right, and. I spent a week looking for photos of Chris Lee, and when I got it done, handed in the pencils, my editor, Julie Schwartz, said, "Oh, looks great, except for one thing." I said, "What's that?" And he said, "Your vampire looks exactly like Christopher Lee."
But to you, that was good news, though, right? That's what you were going for.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to do. And he said, "Yeah, no. You need to make a few changes, like give him a different hairstyle,
yeah.
give him a scar, and like give him a nose like yours." So okay, I made all those changes, but none of the rest of the stuff changes. The poses and the structure underneath really didn't change, and of course the end result was the fan mail came in and said the story was good, but Grell took all those poses from Christopher Lee. yes. So instead of...
You're like, what's wrong with that?
Right. Instead of coming off as an homage, it came off as a ripoff.
As a ripoff.
Yeah.
Well, what do people usually commission you the most to draw? Would that be Green Arrow? Or
I don't think there's a question. I've probably drawn more Green Arrow, especially in the last 5 years since
the
Arrow TV series yeah. has been on. It used to be about 6-4 Warlord Green Arrow. Then it was 6-4 Green Arrow Warlord. Now it's probably 10-1 Green Arrow Warlord.
Do you watch the show at all, the Arrow?
I do when I get a chance. I'm on the road so much it's hard to remember.
Yeah.
Gee, it's Wednesday night because a lot of times I'm still asleep. Or sleeping it off, or whatever. I watched the first season and a good share of the second, and from there on, it was catch as catch can. But I like it.
Good, I was wondering, because you're so closely tied to that universe, because you did so much work with Green Arrow, that I was wondering if you approved of the directions of other people taking it on the screen.
Yeah, I approved of almost everything except when they made Shadow Chinese.
Okay.
She's Japanese. Even the name is Japanese.
Gotcha.
But I understand the logistics and the economics of making a television series in Canada. They are pretty much compelled to use actors out of the British Commonwealth. Otherwise, they lose their tax subsidy, their rebates, which is one of the reasons why I haven't done any work on the series beyond drawing the wanted poster. If they were to hire me as a writer, for instance, that would reduce the percentage of tax rebate that they get from Canada.
Yeah.
And they won't jeopardize that.
Right. It's such an interesting perspective in someone in your shoes when you see these characters unfold on TV or in movies. These characters that you've worked on, do you find yourself kind of critiquing, like, well, I would have done it this way?
Oh, especially, be honest. Especially with the Sable television series.
Why did they do it
series.
Like that?
Yeah. Especially with the Sable television series. Sable was an adventurer, bounty hunter, bodyguard, anything for a buck for hire. He's a former African professional hunter, turned game warden, turned mercenary, who goes off his nut when his family is slaughtered by elephant poachers and hunts them down and kills them in the most horrific manners imaginable. And the theme of it is, you know, if all you have to live for is vengeance, what do you do when your vengeance is done? Well, he becomes a drunk, winds up being deported back to the United States, where he's looking for an easy way to die. He's a guy with a death wish who doesn't quite have the balls to pull the trigger himself.
Gotcha.
So he hires out as literally anything for a buck for hire. But he's also a closet nice guy. His deep dark secret is that he writes children's books about a troop of leprechauns living in a fairy mound in Central Park.
Okay.
And my take on the character was that he was going to be the opposite of Batman.
Okay.
None of this by day the mild-mannered whatever,
right.
By night the dark,
right.
Avenger. No secret identity, except that when he appears as, when he has to do a personal appearance for his children's books, he goes by a pen name, B.B. Flemm, F-L-E-M-M, which is not bad when it's written out, but when you say it, it's that stuff you hawk out of your throat in the morning, right?
Yeah.
Flemm.
Yeah.
That's also the only time he wears a disguise, although he does paint his face with a battle mask. It's camouflage paint. Mm-hmm. But I'm here to tell you, if you paint stripes on your face and try to convince somebody you're not who you are, they're going to go, come on, really?
Right, you need more than that.
Yeah, just like Green Lantern and the Domino mask, right?
Well, you can wear a hat and glasses and people don't know who you are, right?
Right. If I wear this hat, people recognize me all over the world. It's the hat they recognize. They don't recognize me at all. When ABC did the TV series, they said, no, you got it all wrong. What it is by day, he's a mild-mannered children's author, and by night he becomes the Dark Avenger, which is, they reversed my reverse on Batman, made it exactly like Batman, and just did a really awful job with the series. When they did a test audience, came up solid in the 18 to 35-year-old male audience, right? Mm-hmm. Number one. And then they put it on Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Guess where your demographic is on Saturday night at 8 o'clock? They're not sitting in front of a TV set.
Right.
We started off selling Dodge trucks and Coors beer. So we went from beer and four-wheel drives to Calgon and Ritz crackers in a matter of 2 weeks. Mm. It was awful. But the one shining light in the whole mix was that Rene Russo made her acting debut as Eden Kendall, Sable's literary agent.
Oh, right on.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. I imagine in interviews you probably get the Iron Man question a lot, because weren't you involved in the series when Tony was revealed as being Iron Man?
I'm the guy who did it.
You were the guy that actually revealed him to the world.
Yeah, that was me.
Thought that was cool that made him so different. Like, they did that. They got to that right away in the movies. You know, he was doing his little press.
That was my vindication.
Like, he just blurted it out.
That was my vindication, really.
I bet you were like, see?
I had the support of the editor, uh-huh. And I had the permission of the publisher, so that wasn't something that I just did arbitrarily. I wouldn't do something like that,
right.
Because it could theoretically destroy the character. But what happened was that the fans got in an argument. Huge argument over how I did it. The one faction thought he should have only done it because he needed to save the world from some deadly catastrophe. But I had turned the focus from the suit, okay? I was more interested in the man inside the iron. Mm-hmm. The Iron Man. It wasn't the suit, it was Tony Stark.
Right.
Before I came along, the suit had become so all-powerful that you couldn't touch it, right? Not only was the suit larger and bulkier, Tony Stark looked like a slightly more muscle-bound version of Arnold Schwarzenegger. His neck was like 2 feet around, and he had a tiny little head that tapered down out to his shoulders, and fists as big as a garbage can.
So he'd been doing some performance enhancing.
Right. So the thing is that Tony Stark's supposed to be an egghead. He's supposed to be like Bill Gates inside this iron suit, right?
Right.
And my take was that I had to get back to the original idea, which is it's the suit that protects him and keeps him alive, but it also isolates him and makes it hard for him to deal with other people in his life. And I wanted to humanize him in such a way that people would really recognize it. Now, over the course of the continuity of the story, Pepper Potts, who was one time his main love interest, right, winds up married to Happy Hogan. And I had a story where something happened. Pepper gets pregnant. She's pregnant with Happy's baby. And Tony is experiencing all the angst of what might have been. He's thinking about, this could have been my child. It could have been my baby. And then because of something that he's responsible for, she's injured and she loses the baby. Shortly after that, Stark is at his headquarters at a big press luncheon. Cameras on all over the place, and down the street there's a robbery going on. The bad guys are making their getaway in a car, and right down below is a little boy with his dog. The dog pulls away and runs into the street, and he's about to get creamed by the car. And
all this is happening at once.
Right. Tony doesn't hesitate for a second, goes over the wall, becomes Iron Man on the way down, and smashes the car to a halt. And all those friends are totally pissed off. Like, you bastard. You kept the secret from us all those years, and you revealed it for a dog? And Tony says, I didn't do it for the dog. I did it for him. And he points to the boy. And the one faction warred with the other faction, and the screaming match spilled out into the hallways of Marvel Comics. And the next thing you know, I'm fired, and they tried to sweep it all
under. Really? It got that bad?
Yeah, it got that
I
bad.
I figured you just would have had people like opinionated about it, obviously. But
bad enough that I got booted out the door, and for a long time they tried their best to sweep that storyline completely under the rug, pretend it never happened.
Which, again, is so ironic because that's the storyline they're going with now.
Right.
You're welcome.
That was my vindication, you know, sitting there watching Iron Man at the end when Robert Downey goes, I'm Iron Man. I was like, yes!
That is an awesome story. That's really cool. I don't want to keep you too long. You probably got a lot of traveling ahead of you. What you got? Where y'all to next?
My next show is next weekend in Marlboro, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And then I actually get a couple of weeks off.
Yay.
But anybody who's wanting to find me on the road can go to my website, www.mikegrell.com, and my appearance schedule is listed there.
Okay, great. So all the information?
Everything, including my art rep, Catskill Comics. There's a link that'll lead you there. Also, Worlds of the Warlord. Warlord Worlds, it's called, which is a regular weekly combination podcast and a website. I don't do Facebook, but there is a Mike Grell fan page that's supportive, and it's authorized.
Okay, great.
All right.
Is there any other projects you want to plug before we go?
I am currently doing the variant covers for Green Arrow, starting with issue 18. running on through the fall when we'll be celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Longbow Hunters. And I've got an upcoming project illustrating a new Tarzan book.
Okay, great. Well, man, I certainly appreciate you coming by and giving us some of your time. I'm a huge fan
of
your work, and I hope you have safe travels, and we'll be looking for your novels coming out.
Thanks, guys. See you down the road.
All right, you too. Have a good one. Thanks. Y'all be safe.
Thank you.
Is that some good music?
That's some good music. I like it.
You like that?
I do.
Let's sit here and listen to it for a minute. Not like a whole minute.
Like, you
know, a metaphorical minute.
Metaphorical minute. Hey, you know, I hate I did not get to be on the outro last week, but, you know, I had some prior engagement stuff come up. Some family issues and stuff like that. You did a really good job.
I kept it short and sweet, man. I always feel weird when I'm on here talking by myself.
But you did a really good job with it. I was going to point that out.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations on...
And I like to hang back and let the background music kind of play. A lot of the stuff I've mentioned on here before we get from Techno Axe's YouTube channel. I like to give people credit where credit's due.
Yeah. That's a really good channel, too.
I would like for me and you to start doing some stuff in here, like with... You know, guitar stuff and drum tracks and doing like some background stuff like that.
Anytime, bro.
To put on here. But yeah, in the meantime, there's some good channels out there for like really cool background music and stuff. And I've used other channels, but like the main one I use is the Techno Axe channel, and I give them full credit for it. One thing I wanted to mention before we wrap up is back to the Railroad Festival thing. The Seeking Seven debuted a new song.
Yeah.
And
this is really good.
I have an inside connection. I'm not trying to brag, but I know people. And like, I have that song sent to me, and I have full permission to put it on the air. And next week, we're going to play the new Seeking Seven song for you guys.
Awesome.
We debuted a song live. Yeah. For the very first time.
If you haven't seen the teaser of it on YouTube yet, check out our Facebook pages and stuff. I mean, we've shared it on the Kill Pop Culture page too, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so. That song isn't like complete, like studio-wise yet. We played it live, but
that's why we played it.
The studio version isn't the final version, but it'll be out real soon, and you'll know more about it on here.
Speaking of which, we've got to get back to work on this album soon.
Yeah. Now that the Railroad Festival's over, we've got a lot of cool stuff to work on, and I'm really excited about it. This is funny, and I think everybody's this way. I bitch about how busy I stay. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so busy. But if you really want to know the truth, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
No. Like, I wouldn't know what to do with my time.
My life is so fast-paced. It seems like every minute is spoken for. And sometimes, I'm not going to lie, it does feel overwhelming.
Yeah.
Especially like around Railroad Festival and things where there's like a lot of pressure.
April
I'm like, oh my God, I just want to quit and go on vacation.
But then
when things do quiet down, if when they ever do, I'm like, damn.
Well, what are we going to do now?
Like, I've had an hour to do nothing, and I'm alone with my thoughts. I'm ready to get busy again.
Yeah, I'm like that. I feel like that during April and October.
If you ever hear me bitching about how busy I am, just ignore me.
Because he loves it.
I do love it. I really do. I like that. I like living in that moment of like, okay, I got to do this. We got to do that. Then this is happening. Then this is happening. And you know, it makes my life go by really fast.
Right.
I am what, 25?
Maybe 23.
Am I 23? What's
my age? Yeah, you're adding a couple of years to it. Which I'm okay with that because that makes me 21 again.
So anyway, thanks for checking out
episode, is it 67?
67. I'm digging it.
Is there anything else to mention or talk about?
Let's go ahead and plug this weekend. We have OWO Wrestling.
There's a big show coming up this weekend. The King. I'm going to cue some music right here.
Yeah, buddy.
Jerry the King Lawler is going to be in Amory, Mississippi this weekend.
Yes, sir.
That's epic.
OWO Wrestling's doing some pretty big things.
Yeah.
Like next weekend, I think, in... I can't remember if it's Verona or where exactly. Buff Bagwell's coming back again.
Buff the Stuff.
Buff the Stuff. We've got...
Can't wait to get back to OWO this weekend.
Yeah, OWO, and then next weekend is...
The Alice Cooper concert.
Yes, sir. Looking so forward to that.
I wish I was interviewing Alice Cooper.
No doubt. We're not worthy. We're not worthy. We'd be like that, like Wayne's World. Backstage with Alice Cooper.
Yeah. All right, I guess we need to ride off into the moonlight. Thanks for listening to us. We are Kill Pop Culture. Go on iTunes and give us that 5-star rating and a, almost an interview. Give us a review.
Yeah.
Tell us you like us, because we certainly like you. Oh,
look at that. That was a hardcore one there.
That was out of the blue, man. You got to watch my ass.
Yeah.
You never know what my ass is going to do.
Oh.
I'll ring that damn bell like a son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch. That son of a bitch. Inside joke.
This is where we lose the podcast every time.
No, it's okay. People love this. Since we're plugging stuff, I do want to say this. Even after this weekend, the Kill Pop Culture Instagram page has really, really been blowing up. So thank everybody for that. If you haven't checked out the Kill Pop Culture Instagram page yet, check it out. It's kind of like my main page now, because I have more time to keep up with it than I do my own. Less time to keep up with it than I do my own. So I just leave it logged into that one.
Yeah, I gotta give you props, because, you know, you hit me up and you were like, we need an Instagram, and I was like, well, we're a podcast, like, what are we gonna put on Instagram? And you're like, well, I can put stuff on there, and I was like, well, I've got so many pages to manage right now, I can't do it, so you're gonna have to do it, and you've done a really good job with it. So,
well, thank you.
I hate giving you credit for things.
I promise, because I absolutely
cannot stand
you. I'm not gonna let my head blow up. It's not gonna get big. I promise.
No, in all seriousness, you've done a great job with that, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So I'm probably going to bombard you with even more responsibilities and make you hate your life.
You're still trying to get me to get a Twitter account.
Twitter? Yeah, we have a Twitter, at KillPopC.
I don't have one.
Well, we got to go.
But I don't want to.
But I don't want to go. We're going to ride off into the moonlight. Thanks for listening to us. We're broadcasting high atop the first and only floor of Kill J headquarters at the Kill J Ranch. And I love you. Bye.
Love you, mean it.